Amen. Thank you, Knox. All right. Hi, everyone. Good morning. Thanks for making time to be here. I'm excited for the opportunity to talk with you about Healthy Tech. My name is Nathan Sutherland, and I run the ministry Gospel Tech. This is a 501c3 nonprofit I started to really equip you to do three things. I want to equip you to talk about Healthy Tech. I'm going to give you the words today that you will be able to walk away to talk with your family members, with your coworkers, with your children, with the young people that you work with. If you're a teacher, if you're a leader of young people, a mentor, or just a community member, you're going to have the words to talk about Healthy Tech. The second thing is going to be, we're going to communicate the gospel. We're going to take the good news that God saves sinners, and that as saints, meaning redeemed sinners, that influences both the tech we use and how we should use it, which is the third piece of, then we're going to apply the good news of the gospel to our daily tech lives. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. That's the whole just because it's permissible doesn't mean it's a beneficial thing. But then there are technologies that are not morally wrong, but might not be a good fit for me or for my children or for a family member, or that I might forego because of a weaker brother or sister in their walk. So that's what we're going to learn to do just today. Yeah, in an hour. I know. It's exciting. I am really enthused with the way you guys are handling this, because there's going to be a study of the book afterwards, and then I'll come back in June and we'll have like more conversations. So this isn't just a one and done, but I can tell you that in an hour, I can equip you to talk about Healthy Tech, remind you of the gospel, and then we'll talk through how to apply it. You have a piece of paper in front of you. Hopefully. If you don't, you'll want this, because I say lots of words fast. It will walk you through the four parts, two types of tech, how do we assess tech health, build a hedge, and then use the best tech well. There's actually a fifth one snuck in there, because I found as a middle school teacher, you don't want to go over 4 points. It used to be three, but the three was like a part A and B and took like 12 minutes each, and that's just cheating. So it's four sections with a fifth in there. It'll be represented here on the screen. If you have any questions, please jot them down. I will try to finish with about 5 to 10 minutes left so that we have time for Q&A. But if for some reason I get really excited and tell you an extra story, you can come up to me afterwards. I'll be here, all right? And then we'll meet up in a bit. Am I popping on this mic? Is that all right? Okay? A little bit. Pull it back. Lots, again, of words coming quickly and powerfully. A little bit to know about me. I was a middle school teacher for a decade. I taught at Allen Junior High in Puyallup, Washington. Eighth grade language arts is the best because it's eighth grade. I love eighth graders because they're old enough to understand sarcasm. I made lots of very sad seventh graders. And they're young enough to still like be open about their goals, motives, and purpose. Whereas by the time 10th grade for sure gets around, y'all start to figure out what we want you to say. So if I go, how are you doing? You'll be like, I'm dying inside, but I'm doing great, Sutherland. Eighth graders will just be like, listen, I didn't go to sleep last night. Your shoes don't match and I'm not doing any work today. Like, I can work with that actually. Like that's, because by ninth grade, by the time you're dying inside and just smiling and nodding because you know that's what adults want to see, I can't help that. We call that active non-learning, right? You are refusing to allow me to help you to learn. So eighth graders are my people. I am talking to the eighth grader inside each and every one of you. The second thing you do need to know is that I was raised in a family of 5 kids. I'm the middle, and I had 4 sisters. So if you want a really unique adult, have him raised by 5 moms, put him in middle school for 10 years. Right, like just repeat eighth grade on loop. All of these kids, we'd finally like bond, and we'd have this, you know, great rapport, and then they would leave with all of their friends, and I would start again with another group of eighth graders that didn't like me by default. You might think that's overstatement. Think about it, though. You have your kids who show up, and they're like, science, it's my jam. They love their science teachers. And then you got your math kids, and you even have your history kids. They're like, history is my thing. It's all I think about all the time. Very few kids are language arts kids. They show up and they go, I already know how to read and write. Like, I literally don't need this class. And I'd be like, that's not what we're doing. Right? We're working on communicating how we understand others, make sure they understand us. But kids just stare at you when you say that, like a cow looking at a new gate. So I would start every year, win them over, and then rinse and repeat, which brings me to doing this job. I no longer have feelings. You literally can't hurt them. So any feedback you have, I'm open to it. But third and finally, my main goal in doing this is I'm raising 3 kids of my own. So my humans are Owen, Henry, and Hadley. They are 11, 9, and now 6. She's pretty pumped about that. Owen, you do need to know a little bit about them because they're going to sound like people you know. Owen is your classic type A firstborn. He's the kid with a goal and a mission. He likes rules. He likes other people following rules. His favorite sport is baseball. He started playing baseball a few years ago and was like, wait, there's a rule for that? I love it. He likes that only one person goes at a time, right? There's not three batters with three pitchers. There's one. And he loves pitching because rules. He got put in for the first time in a playoff game last year. There was a kid on second. There was a kid on third. The other pitcher was getting knocked around. His team was up by one. He went out to close out the inning. I asked him later, buddy, what was going through your mind when you were throwing every pitch, staring at a kid on third base? And he's like, I was thinking about how that batter was taking my pitch count. Because if you pitch over 20 pitches as a replacement pitcher, you don't get to pick pitch in the next playoff game. That they have lots of rules around pitching. So my then 10-year-old was like, this batter is fouling off too many balls. That's what he was thinking about in a playoff game with one and runners on second and third. Rules, focus, determination. Then there's Henry. Henry is not so worried about all the rules. Henry is my absent-minded professor of a child. He is a very erudite human. He likes big words. He likes vocab. He likes puns. He likes reading things in his current favorite book series. A gentleman behind us at church asked him the other day, like, what are you reading? And he was like, Lord of the Rings. And he's not being like ironic about it. He just enjoys the books. He appreciates that Tolkien is so serious and likes books by Roald Dahl because they're funnier. Like, Henry is one of those kids you're like, I'm excited to see you grow up. Sometimes I'm concerned about you crossing streets because you forget they're there because he is so in his thoughts, right? He's just one of those people. We'd be like, Henry, I need you to go do this thing. We were backing out of the garage. Dad, I forgot my backpack. Not surprising. Go inside and grab it. 3 minutes go by and then four. And I'm like, I know where his backpack was. I go in. Henry, where are you? Right here. Look around the corner. He's laying on the ground. What are you doing? Reading. Son, we're in the car waiting for you. He's like, oh, right. Or like he is in this moment when Jesus talks to us about abiding. Henry abides. He walked into my house with one shoe on. I said, Henry, where is your other shoe? He looked at his feet. He looked at me. He goes, I don't know. Because he's not worried about the past. It can't be changed. He isn't concerned about the future. It hasn't happened yet. This is the moment that God has made for him. And sometimes he loses his shoes. But it is a very sweet, amazing personality. And then there's Hadley. And Hadley is dynamic. She is a lot. She's a big personality. When she shows up in a room, you know it. You might have been having a party. It's her party now. I like to describe Hadley as a disco ball of a human being. She shows up and just throws beauty and joy on everyone around her, whether or not they were looking for it. Her life is basically unicorns and sparkles and polka dots. That is everything she loves. People, faces, puppies, like all of it. Now you take these three people and look at the way they use the tech based on how God has designed them. Owen loves technology that helps him be organized and structured. He likes coding. It brings him great joy. It is fun for him. Henry loves engaging stories, visual stories, written stories. He loves telling them and receiving them. Hadley likes people, more faces. She's a true extrovert. She's having a bad day. You put her around more people. She gets more energized and does better in that environment, and the introverts in the room all wilt a little thinking about it. But each one of these has a downside. Owen's control with technology can be he can actually buy into the lie that with enough focus and planning, things will always go your way. Like the number one pitch from most of our technologies, right? Get this thing and it'll fix all those problems. And he can spend a lot of emotional effort and get really frustrated when things don't go his way. Henry can get engaged in such amazing stories made by trillion-dollar companies with billion-dollar budgets that he forgets to look up at the world around him because there's always that next thing to be present in. And it's sometimes very difficult to pull your mind away from the task that's been given to you by technology. And Hadley is such a big personality. 10 seconds on the internet and you know who Hadley is and you like her. Right? She is the kind of personality that transfers on TikTok very well. But you can get a lot of positive feedback for that. And when you're an extrovert that thrives off positive feedback, it can be a dangerous spot to be. You can get a lot of your identity from that instead of from what God says about you. And when people turn mean, I don't know if you know this, people can be mean on the internet. You can take it with an undue amount of weight. You're allowing strangers to speak truth into you that isn't actually true to whose you are and to who you are in light of that. So those are my humans. My goal coming from this then is to make sure that we're raising up young people who know how to love God and from that use the best tech. So we talked today, we're going to talk about the two types of tech, assessing tech health and then making tech safe at home, followed by how do we use the best tech well. That's our sneaky fourth point. There are two kinds of tech. There is tech that helps us create, it's called tool tech, and tech that helps us consume, it's called drool tech. This is important because every research piece, including when I was just at a conference in Florida 4 days ago, and someone's like, yeah, but what about this research? They generally just look at, does it have a screen? Does it connect to the internet? Does it, right? Like they have these very broad brushes they paint technology with, but there is tech that helps us create and tech that helps us consume. It isn't good and bad, but it is designed differently. When it helps you create, this means you have a goal you want to accomplish. Tech helps you do that. You want to build something, make something, design something. It will help you do that. Drool tech will still help you accomplish your goal. You want to connect with friends. You want to enjoy something. It'll help you do that. But it comes with a goal of its own every time. And we're going to talk just briefly here in a moment about how to make sure we can recognize that. But it wants to take your time, your focus, and your money. It doesn't make it bad, but if you're going to have a fight about technology, it's probably not tool tech. There aren't a lot of kids out there who are fighting their parents about their use of email. Right? There's not a lot of like, 5 minutes till dinner, I need 10! This email is so good. My blog followers are going to love it. Right? Like, it's just not happening. So, with that, eighth grade teacher comes out, and we're going to do a pop quiz. I'm going to put up a type of technology. You're going to turn to an elbow partner. That's someone you could nudge with an elbow. Go ahead and find one now. You can have up to two because you have two elbows. All right. I mean, I will warn you, if you don't have a buddy, it's going to be me. So find a buddy. First type of tech, I'm going to show it to you. You are going to, in your head, think, is it tool or drool? Then when I say go, you're going to turn to your neighbor. You'll have 10 seconds to tell them, is that tool, drool, and why you think so. First type, nail gun. Go. Three, two, one. Raise your hand if you say tool tech. Raise your hand if you said drool tech. Raise your hand if you thought it was a trap. Okay, a couple of you. Yeah, all right. I know who my cynical people in the room are. I was just trying to be really, really clear. It is literally a tool. It's how we think of it. There are no nail guns, to my knowledge, that are like, you've used 500 nails today, but for $195, we can get you another 1,000 nails. Right, we don't currently have any goals, any medals, any notifications. No one's getting buzzed with like, oh, my nail gun said I need to use it today. Right? There's no behavioral design in a nail gun. It does what you say, and then it stops whenever you stop. If you want to put a piece of metal through wood, nail gun. Fancy hammer, which is just a fancy rock tied to a stick. Second type of tech. Podcasts. Now this gets personal for me. I run one of these. 10 seconds, turn to your neighbor, tool or drool. Go. Think so? Why? That's a good question. Okay, all right. I appreciate your gut though. Three, two, one. Raise your hand if you said tool tech. Raise your hand if you said drool tech. It's tricky, right? Because this is wild. I have a podcast. When I produce it, it's me and GarageBand and a microphone. No goals, no medals. It doesn't care if it's 5 minutes, 15 minutes, 50 minutes. It doesn't mind if I do one a week, one a month. I'm on episode 275 or something like that. No bonuses from that. Just more content for people to engage. But almost every single platform you engage that podcast on has retention tech designed into it. It's why if you go to Apple Podcasts and look up Gospel Tech, it's going to give you 30 other suggestions first. You could listen to my podcast every single day. Every time you open that app, I'm not going to be the first suggestion. It's like when you go to watch Netflix or any of your favorite, wherever you might stream a show, you watch the same shows all the time. We're using Peacock right now to watch The Americas. Have you guys seen this series? It's like Planet Earth, but without the depression. Right? It's not like everything dies all the time. It's like looking for ways to tell you beautiful stories about creation. It's very cool. But it's never the first suggestion. It's like second page down all the way over on the side because it's retention tech that happens to have some really cool information documentary stuff on it. Similar with podcasts. Creating it was tool tech, but consuming it is almost always coming through drool tech, even if the content itself isn't about retention. We don't run ads. I don't make a profit off that. It is just a resource being a nonprofit allows us to run. So podcasts can be both depending on what side you're on. In fact, we've recently teamed with Krista Ministries, so Spirit 105.3, and they are helping us get that out even farther, which is super cool. And Krista, similar, right? Like they're a nonprofit running towards getting the gospel out, and sometimes there's retention tied in there. So podcasts can be both depending on how we're engaging it. Oh, I would say if you go to like gospeltech.net though, /podcast hypothetically, there's no ads, there's no retention, it's only one podcast in sequential order. So that would be an example of like, well, that's tool tech. You're picking everything that comes across your plate to inform yourself. Which brings us to number three. Turn to your neighbor about, wait for it. There you go. News feeds. 10 seconds. Go. Three, two, one. Raise your hand if you said tool tech. Raise your hand if you said drool tech. We're catching the vision. It's got the word feed in it. I'm not talking about the content of your news. We're talking about the delivery method. And news feeds alter the order, at the very least, of what you get, and often the actual content. They are not necessarily lying to you, but they are not giving you the same information someone else have, because their job is to make you love it or hate it. That's just the way the market works. So when I published a book, the publisher said, you want 1 in 5-star reviews. And I was like, 5-star makes sense. Why would I ever want a 1-star review? And they're like, because 1-star, say on Amazon, you buy my book, you loathe it. You get a 1-star review. Amazon will suggest that book to other people who are likely to give it a 1-star review. And people will literally buy it to hate it, to review it poorly. And either way, you're selling books. Like, that's what publishers want to do, is move books. And that is what news organizations want. They don't mind if you love them or hate them. Think about the number of shows you've listened to, radio shows, podcast shows, you knew you were going to be mad. And you clicked on it anyway in order to be mad about it. And then you took it and were like, this person has never been more wrong in their entire life. And 5 people you know went and listened to it so they could also be mad. That, my friends, is behavioral design, and they know what makes us tick. It's really good because that drives traction, which drives revenue. So that brings us to computers. Tool or drool, turn to your neighbor, go. Three, two, one. Raise your hand if you said tool tech. Raise your hand if you said drool tech. Is it both? Okay, all right, you had your hands up. Computers are tricky, they're a portal, right? You can go either direction. My district went 1-to-1 when I was teaching. Every kid got a laptop. Every kid had a device where they left their books at home and now they went and did this. I had an awesome unit. I'm obviously very humble about this, but there was a unit when trying to teach 8th graders about something called tone and mood. Tone is how the author sounds. Mood is how it makes you feel. But you ask an 8th grader, how did that make you feel? They will say bored or hungry. And that probably wasn't the author's intent. I'm like, no. Like, how did they want to? Oh, yeah, that's tricky. So I would wait until after Christmas break. Christmas break leading up, we're reading all the great stories. So much fluff and fun. The Gift of the Magi, right? Like, it's just love that matters. Mickey and Minnie are generally involved. It's wonderful. And then January. So they're showing up for school in the dark. They're leaving school in the dark. There's only 6 hours, and it's all while they're in the classroom. And I assign them a series of bummer texts, starting with To Build a Fire by Jack London. If you're not familiar with the story, dude freezes to death in the Yukon. Slow. Like, it's not a fast process. His dog lives, don't worry, but he does not. So you read it, and the kids are like, that was weird. I'm like, fair enough. Here's your next story, Little Matchstick Girl. Yes, right? Awful. Little girl in downtown London freezing to death selling matchsticks. Don't worry, she meets her dead grandma. But it's sad. And they're generally at this point being like, I'm not so sure that Sutherland's okay, which is when I bring them the monkey's paw, which is also a bummer. It's about two parents making a wish with like a bad genie situation. And they get their wish, but bad things happen in the process. Followed by Edgar Allan Poe's Telltale Heart. Right? Yeah, okay. Guy murders his roommate. So just bummer after bummer after bummer. And at some point, some kid in some class will go, why do we have to read this? I'm like, yeah, why? Like, what do you mean? Like, it's just all so sad. Like, Right? Isn't that crazy? Like, just because it isn't real doesn't mean it isn't true. Fiction can affect you. You got bummed out by reading about something that never happened. Mood. Right? So I am riding high on this lesson. Like, I am getting eighth graders to experience mood and then apply it, and then one-to-one devices show up. So now they go to the share file, and they click on Sutherland fourth period to build a fire. A couple clicks. We all know that no one's good past two. But then, devices that we paid good money for came from Microsoft with pop-up notifications. And so while my children are doing this, the notification comes and says, did you know this device has Minecraft? And it's not just a notification banner, it's clickable. So my kids can just click on Minecraft and escape all of the bummerism that Sutherland is putting them through. Right, that really like 1990s grunge lesson plan that he has. All on the same device. That same device is delivering them text that will help them understand communication with humans. And will also help them escape to a $4 billion video game purchased by Microsoft and delivered directly to the brains of my youth during school hours. Both on a computer. When we are thinking tool and drool tech, we need to recognize it's not just does it plug into a wall, does it have a screen, does it even have the internet, it's what is this technology's goal. If its goal is retention, there's a really good chance it's drool tech. If I were to give you a singular example for tool tech, it would be Microsoft Word. None of you has ever, at 11 p.m., gone to bed with your $1,000 alarm clock and put it on your bedstand and had it vibrate, and you picked it up, and there's a notification, and you click it, and it says, hey, haven't seen you in a while. And it's Microsoft Word. Right? I thought maybe we could write a haiku together. Microsoft Word does not bother you. It doesn't follow up with you. You could write once a day, once a month, once a year. It never will notify you. It will not motivate you. It will not try to incentivize you into using it. Never has anyone been writing their first book and they're so nervous about it. Gotten a notification from Word that says, hey, Sally down the street, she already started her book, and it's way better than yours. Here's an excerpt to make sure you feel terrible about yourself, right? That's not Word's job. It just wants to help you write, edit, and share, and then it ends there. Compare that to this. What company is this? That's the YouTubes, folks. 2.5 billion monthly users on YouTube. If they were able to get 1 in 10 of their monthly users to stay for 1 minute. So you get 10 people to show up to watch a video. They want to figure out how to fix their heater or how to do that do-it-yourself project or just watch a painting how-to. You get 1 in 10. 9 walk away, 1 in 10 stay for 1 extra minute at some point in a month. They gain 173,000 days worth of viewing from that 1 extra minute. That means you go on to watch a video. They actually share this. 2016 was the last time they gave the stat. It wasn't 1 in 10. It wasn't 4 in 10. It was 7 in 10. They actually quit reporting the stat because we freaked out. Because their behavioral design is so good. We click 7 suggested bars. 7 out of 10 people went to watch how to fix that appliance in their home and stayed to figure out how that squirrel got through that maze. It's not bad that you watch that video. It's a delightful video. If you've never watched the Squirrel Maze videos, please do. Mark Roberg's a delight. But it is them incentivizing your decisions, or excuse me, they're incentivized to alter your decisions, to get you to do something you didn't intend to do. You wanted to see this one video. You stayed to watch a second. 7 out of 10 in 2016, and I promise the tech has gotten better in the last 8 years. The reason we care about this is because it's behavioral design. This is Psychology 101. There's just 3 slides on it. First, it's called operant conditioning. B.F. Skinner in 1938 figured out he could get a rat to press a lever on command. You either give it a treat, and if it doesn't want the treat, you electrify the floor. Rat freaks out, eventually will press that lever whether or not it's hungry. It may want a treat, but it doesn't want to get electrocuted. Bring that to the book called Hooked. Now, we're skipping over the neurons that fire together, wire together piece that's in between here. Came out in the mid-1940s. But in application, it looks like this. Neary Yall wrote a book, subtitle, How to Make a Habit-Forming Product. It is not a cautionary tale. It's a how-to manual. First, you need a trigger. Either internal, someone's bored, or they're anxious, or they're feeling sad, or external, like a notification. That sends you to an action. Well, you're feeling sad? Just go watch 90 seconds of YouTube videos, and you'll feel better instantly, which gives you a variable reward. Sometimes it's literal, like you're playing Fortnite and a llama gives you drops that you didn't expect. But sometimes it's more metaphorical. The variable reward might be a comment or it might be a feeling that you get. Sometimes you get it and sometimes you don't, but that doesn't stop you from checking again later. My favorite variable reward, by the way, is when your news feed sends you a notification and you go and check what your news feed has to say. And then before you leave, what do? You've read the news and you know it's there. You swipe one more time, right? That swipe is a trained action that gives you a little thinky thing, by the way, based off a slot machine. That's the psychology that goes behind it, and gives you a variable reward of more info, maybe. And it doesn't matter if it gives you good info or not. You go, ah, shucks, and you'll close it and walk on with your life. But it doesn't mean you won't try it again in the future because now you're invested, which means the next time you get the notification, you're more likely to repeat the behavior. And this is their job. This is, they don't care how long you stay. You watching a 20-minute YouTube video is the same as you watching a 30-second video in terms of this loop. They just have to get you to do it a lot because neuroplasticity is a thing. Your brain adapts to your behavior. So if you make a choice a lot, you get better at making that choice, whether or not it's a good choice. Think about it in terms of the snooze button. You snooze every day for a week. By day 7, you may not even hear your alarm. You just wake up 30 minutes later. Right? Your brain learns, I don't need to pay attention to that noise. Block it out. Let's keep sleeping. Whereas if you get up every day for a week, it's easier to get up. It's not easy, but easier. Social Dilemma was a Netflix special that came out right as COVID was hitting us. It was like the perfect storm of depressingly true information. I wouldn't necessarily encourage you to watch it now because it's not hope-focused. If you're going to spend your time on something, read something like The Anxious Generation. If you just want info about what's happening. But they do a great job of going to some of the people that made these behavioral loops and asking them, why does this work? Notifications, this is companies telling you you're too dumb to make your own choices, right? This is you being like, I want to spend time with your family. And notifications be like, no, you don't. You want to meet that friend you haven't talked to in 20 years who just had a birthday. Get online and check them out, right? Like that's notifications. You had a goal and it's like, yeah, but you're not picking right. Do what we tell you to do. Which leads you to things like likes. I didn't understand why the like button was a big thing. It makes sense, though. Like buttons have allowed us to quantify things that were previously in history not quantifiable, like food pictures. You take a picture of food, I take a picture of food, we both have pictures of food. We both post them to the internet. There's just two pictures of food on the internet. You add a like button. You get 50 likes, I get 5. You are literally 10 times more valuable when it comes to food pictures. That can now be sent to advertisers, to viewers, to people that will like and hate your food picture. Like button allowed that, 2010. You start looking at when health declines in the users of social media, 2011 is when we get all those stats. Because we are now able to manipulate your behavior. It's no longer just a place to meet people. It's a place to get your attention drawn and your tastes adjusted. Swipe to refresh, we talked about this. This is you downstairs for 3 minutes while your kids brush your teeth, but you're not ready to go be around them yet. Okay? And you will swipe one more time, or like me, I don't have anything cool on my phone, I'll just check the weather app. But yeah, there's some of you in this room, aren't there? Yeah. I don't know why, but it's fascinating. Infinite scroll, never before in human history has anything other than God been infinite, but now your TikTok feed is. Just keep going, and it will not stop. And at some point, I'm 100% sure AI will just start generating information. It'll just make up videos. Like, you clearly don't care. You've been here 3 hours. It'll just make sure it doesn't stop, right? And if they don't want to be crazy inflammatory, they'll just make it about a video game. Who cares if it's fake video game play, right? Like, here's Fortnite play that never actually happened, but you're still here. Infinite scroll is powerful because there's no end of a page. There's no end of the play. There's no end of the day. It just keeps rolling. Feeds, information directed to you. Points and rewards, a way to motivate you. If we had more time, I would talk about the Medal Prestige Reward System in Call of Duty Black Ops 6. But the short version is, they're lazy. Not only do they just reskin a game, meaning they take the same game and they make it look new every single year with a lot of repeat maps. They then take a game that takes about 11 hours to beat with a storyline, give you 10 prestige classes that take a combined 130 hours to complete. You just 10x'd your design investment for no extra time on your team. Good on you. Ask anyone who's played Call of Duty, seriously. Ask them, have you ever played this game even after it was no longer fun? They will all say yes. This is powerful. Fear of missing out, this is the behavioral design of all of your friends are on there and you're not. So as long as they make sure they know that you're outside and different, human nature will make you want to be involved. But it's just kids, right? We would never deal with this. Would you take out your phones? Now, we're going to do this just for iPhone because it's clunky to do iPhone and Android, and currently the market is led by iPhone. So we're going to do this. All right. Go ahead and click on your systems settings. Yep. So I have this awkward. That's not your screen being weird. That's me. I did turn on my color for the end part there. And then would you please scroll down, it's about three corrals down, to screen time. Once you click that, it's going to show you, so this was done recently, you can't see the date, this was done about 5 days ago. You'll see this little piece under here. So this is your daily average. So last week, I ended up using it this week. So this was while I was at the conference. Hour 54 minutes a day was my average screen time. But you'll see this little thing. They kind of hide it. Click on that. Because it's going to lead you to this. So this is your average daily use. It'll break it down by categories. And it will tell you your most used. So you can see my messages was 3 hours and 30 minutes I had in the week invested in just texting. You could scroll down and you'd see more. But wait. There's more. If you go down just below that, you'll see the number of times a day you pick up your phone on average and unlock it. So for example, there was a week where I was like, I'm under an hour on average. I'm crushing it. What are you, honey? And my wife was something like 3 hours, and I was feeling very good. And then we looked at pickups, and she was in the mid-40s, and I was over 100. Under an hour with more than 100 pickups is not a choice at that point. That's a compulsion. I am nervously unlocking my phone because I'm dissatisfied about something, right? Like, I just don't know what to do with my hands and my mind, so I'm unlocking my phone and then not spending any time on it. I'm just putting it down and going back to whatever else I was doing. This, many of you might have had some eye-opening data. Some of you might have actually had to activate it because if you don't have screen time set up, you actually have to go do that. So finish that process here. It works on us, but it's more effective on young people. Young people, you do not have the frontal cortex part of your brain that helps you inhibit your behaviors yet. You have a thought, you do a thought. That's generally it. So when we hear that young people are averaging more than 8 hours a day on drool tech, this isn't Zoom calls or schoolwork. This is social media, video games, streaming services, including music. We then connect that with the details we have. Gene Twenge is out of San Diego State University in 2017 published a paper that was the first of its kind to say we can show causal links between a use of social media and drool tech, entertainment technologies, and a decline in mental health. In fact, at 2 hours a day, mental health, likelihood of, it's the specific phrases, likelihood of depression and suicidal ideation is what they were looking at. So depression, this idea that you are losing motivation to live daily life, and suicidal ideation, you are actively thinking of taking your own life, increases 22% at 2 hours. At 5 hours a day, it goes up to more than 60% compared to their non-using peers, and we are averaging 8 hours a day. Keep that in mind. That'll show up in the other stats. We are finding that it impacts anxiety and sadness, lowers academic success, and causes what we would call brain drain. There is a later study where they could not replicate this one. So this passes the smell test, but it is not currently passing scientific rigor. What we do know is you take smartphones out of a classroom and grades go up. Why that happens? Well, that's what research is trying to figure out. But we know that it happens. You remove it from the learning environment and kids do better. probably just from the fact that there's not so much tea being spilled in real time. So with mental health, though, this was the piece I wanted to get to. We talked about 8 hours a day. We're seeing it show up with our young people. 2023, the CDC released a 2022 study that looked at kids in 2021. So follow the frog link there. All right, the hopping of the years. But 3 in 5 teenage girls felt persistently sad and hopeless in 2021. 3 in 5? The boys weren't a lot better. It was 1 in 3 boys. So when 33% of your youth feeling sad and hopeless is your good stat, we have some concerns. And you go back and look at where does it really start to spike. It's 2011, a year after the invention of the like button. Because that was the year Drool Tech really got its beefiness. And it got the ability to be personalized and really directive and really manipulative. So why do we care? We care because we can be convinced we need things we didn't want. When you start giving up things you need to get to things you want, that's the definition of addiction. And that is what we are seeing with some of our behavioral design. We have young people who are convinced they need things they never wanted. And that's our concern. So we're going to reflect on this. This was section one. Reflect on this real quick. Which device or app does your family use well? There's a second question. I'm not even going to ask you that one because of time. But I'm going to give you 30 seconds. Turn to your elbow partner. I want you to say something you're using well in your family. It's a boon to your family. Would you turn to your elbow partner and tell them, go. I love that. Yes, thank you. All right. So, there are some great ways we're using tech. The question is, how do we know if it's healthy? Some of us are using awesome tool and Drool Tech, and we're using it well. Some of you are just convinced you're using it well, and you want to convince other people you're using it well, too. We're going to demystify that situation right now. How do we know if it's healthy? This is one of the things that I am most grateful the Lord gave me while doing this work. If there's more time sometime, I'd love to talk to you about how this nonprofit started, but the short version is 2019, I was teaching. I quit in June 2019, and people are like, that's great. You didn't have to teach during COVID. That's true. I started professional speaking in a garage by myself. So the Lord gave me this, though, and here's what this looks like. When we talk about a reset, it's written out on your paper. It stands for relationships and responsibilities, emotion, sleep, enjoyment, time. 5 categories that you can go to and fight for your loved one, not with them when it comes to tech. So if there's something off, you don't go, I don't like your smartphone or your video games or that music. Kids these days, get off my lawn. You get to go and say, hey, I've noticed this thing happens and this bad thing occurs. What's going on? The reason I love this is it stops you from just attacking things that are different. The biggest argument about technology today is that people are like, well, this is what they said about the printing press, which is semi-true. And bicycles, also semi-true. Except no one's printing press ever set goals for them. No one carried a printing press in their pocket or had a printing press in their bedroom. Right? Like these are not things that occurred. These are very different. And when we have behavioral design technology that's coming for youth who don't have the biological structure yet with which to resist it, and then it's just on them all the time, and the internet is there all the time, we have some questions. First, relationships and responsibilities. Does this tech impede? Does it get in the way of? So this would be, hey, I've noticed, when you play that video game, you get more mean to your sister. And that child might say, no, that's just because my sister's really annoying. You'd be like, actually, that's not true. She's annoying all the time. But you're only mean to her when you play this game, right? Or you're more mean. We can point out that behavior and you will run into an either, yes, I see that and here's my explanation, or a, no, I don't see that. Both of those require different responses. If the kid is entirely ignorant of a concerning behavior and even a dangerous or self-destructive behavior, then removing and replacing is absolutely your parental duty and opportunity. You go, all right, you asked me for an egg. I clearly gave you a scorpion. It just became optional because you are not. Therefore, this thing goes away and we're going to replace it with this other awesome thing that's less dangerous for you. Maybe it's just a safer game or a safer kind of technology or more boundaries or maybe something analog because it's harder to make mistakes at the pace of real life. Relationships and responsibilities, though, are going to be your talking points. Then there's emotions. We go, all right, not do you feel good when you use this because it's made well. You will feel good when you use it. The question is, do you need it to be okay? So we told you you can play video games on the weekends after your schoolwork is done. But on Friday, sister has a swim meet. You do not get your video game time, and it's not a human right. We're not like adding more time the next day. You just don't get it this Friday. And the wheels come off. You've seen this before, right? It's not just like, oh, I'm disappointed because I was so excited about that. It's, you hate me, life isn't worth living. I'm going to go ballistic and ruin everyone's day now. That shows you emotions don't seem to be okay, and the question is why? Maybe tech is causing that problem. It is entirely possible this child is overstimulated and cannot fathom life at the pace of real life. If you want a great book on that, Anna Lemke wrote a book called Dopamine Nation that talks about how brains get overstimulated. It's not an easy read. Knox just read it. Chapter one might make you clutch your pearls. I'm not even going to tell you the title because I don't want to say the words out loud. But it's a good book about how brains get addicted to overstimulation. Okay? So, your child might be dealing with that. She lays out in the book very clearly, 30 days is how long you need away from that tech. And there is no methadone for technology. There's no like, but here's your really low stimulation technology that'll help you ease your way off. It's just cold turkey. There's no research to say you will hurt a young person who's overstimulated by going cold turkey away from that tech. So their phone might be self-destructive and you remove the phone, they will not die. They will not suffer long-term psychological impairment. They will just be upset for about 2 weeks until their brain starts producing dopamine at a normal level. That's our first option. The second option, though, is that something else is going on. We had a young man at school. I was called in. He was a ninth grader now. I taught eighth grade. I was brought into a parent-teacher conference. So it was grandparents, principal, counselors, his entire teaching staff, and then me, right? I'm like the ugly duckling. And in this conversation, partway through, I was like, hey, can I see your phone? And he's a ninth grader at this point, so he's getting sassy. He's like, see. I'm like, okay, you're right. I wasn't clear enough. Will you unlock your phone and hand it to me? And he did. And I started swiping through all the folders. Like, what are all these? And he's like, video games. I'm like, how many of these do you think you have in here? More than 500. I'm like, okay. All right, so we're dealing with a young man. The reason he was in there is he's failing 4 out of 6 classes. He's falling asleep in the middle of the school day. We seem to have found our culprit, right? Like, technology's the devil. We just figured it out. And then, like, 3 more minutes of loving conversation, and we realized his dad just moved home. Dad moved out when he was 2. He's a ninth grader. He's 15. Dad moved home to the family garage with his girlfriend and his dog. He's slinging dope to the neighbor kids. And he demands on being called dad. And this young man does not have the words or the emotional intelligence to go, no, you're not my dad. I just happened to share some DNA with you. Right? Kid doesn't have the words to say it, so he goes home, grabs some food, goes to his bedroom, plays video games until he collapses, and then sleeps through his school day, failing 4 out of 6 classes. If we pulled video games away from this kid, would he magically get better? No. He would just medicate with something else. Video games in this kid were a symptom of something else wrong. That's why reset is so powerful. You look at your relationships and your responsibilities. You look at your emotions and you say, are these getting worse because of technology? Okay, now I'm going to go where you are and I'm going to engage you in this conversation. Relationships and responsibilities, I just realized I skipped over this. So let me return to that real quick. Relationships would be with your family and with your friends. Family would be the sister piece with your friends. I've noticed when you're on social media, you have more drama with your friends. Just ask. It's possible that drama is extending from something else. It's possible it's not really drama. It's just mean things they say, and your kid said it to them at lunch, and that kid wrote it to them over social media. If you ever have Bark, it's an accountability software for things like social media. That will show up. Middle schoolers say terrible things to one another, thinking they're funny, and actually trying to be good friends. But that's relationships. Responsibilities to your family, to your friends, to your faith, and to your commitments to things like school. So if you listen to this music and quit showing up to dinner, we're going to have a conversation about that. You seem to be getting more relationally isolated. If you start playing this game and start skipping sports practice, we had something that we called the Destiny Flu because Destiny was really big when I was teaching, and they would release these DLCs, and kids would get sick for 3 or 4 straight days after it dropped out. And they'd just show up and be like, did you max your light levels? Are you happy with yourself? They'd be like, I'm pretty happy with myself. I'm like, cool, because here's a giant slab of homework that you now have to do, right? Because you got sick because of your relationships and responsibilities weren't high priority. So then we have our emotions. Are we okay without this? Then there's sleep. Basically, you don't need a $1,000 alarm clock. Don't have Juul tech in the bedroom. If you have Juul tech in the bedroom, tech that is designed for engagement, you are inhibiting your sleep. You don't need a $1,000 alarm clock. You need that one. They're not a sponsor or anything. It's the one I use. It runs off 2 AAA batteries. You replace them every 6 months. You flip them over to turn on the alarm. You flip it over to turn it off. You can take it when you travel. My wife and I each have one. There's no internet. There's no notifications. It is impossible to check your phone. It's the first thing you do in the day with one of these. The short version, though, is that sleep is really important. It affects everything. Matthew Walker works at a UC Berkeley sleep clinic, and the premise is sleep's important. It affects everything. And very good book. There you go. Seconded the motion. Lack of sleep is linked to depression and suicide. So if you're having a kid who's anxious or depressed, help them get more sleep. We don't adapt to a lack of sleep. It's not like a lot of other stresses in life where your body can manage it. Your body just, I like that, takes a lean on your life. Right? Like, listen, I'm going to take control of this until you do better. Micro sleep is a thing where your brain will just shut off with your eyes open. Driving, that gets dangerous. At the end of the day, sleep's important. Children are supposed to get, young children, like under the age of 5, are supposed to get over 10. When we're getting up into middle school, it's still 9. In high school, it's still 8 to 9. Most high schoolers will laugh at that number. Some of it because schools put unreasonable expectations and stress on our children. That's something to think about. But some of it is because we've just said yes to too many good things. My son plays baseball. He was in the league last year. He was at the baseball field till the lights turned off at 10 to end the game. On a school night in 4th grade. I had to take a good, long, hard look at myself. There's very little chance Owen's going pro. I didn't tell you this, but he's not a flamethrower. He's like a Jamie Moyer. Right? He plays to contact. He got himself through 3 innings on 34 pitches yesterday. I was like, that's my boy. Right? Like, you're not striking people out. You're getting a lot of grounders and hoping your team can play. But just because you enjoy it doesn't mean it's good for you. Make sure you're getting your sleep. Enjoyment is our 4th letter. Basically, not do I have satisfaction in doing this, but does it make all my other enjoyments wilt? We've brought some technologies into our home that were not morally wrong, but when our children engaged them, it changed their personality and their preferences. They no longer found a wide array of enjoyment. They had a singular enjoyment and eclipsed everything else. You've seen this. The introduction to the smartphone, the introduction to social media, the introduction to video games, the introduction of that particular album. And something in their personality shifts and they become a different kid when they engage it. That's what you're looking at here. That's your talking point. I've noticed when this thing entered our house, this behavior changed what's going on. Again, could just be a reflection of something else out there. It could be actually that the technology itself is causing the problem. Final one's time. All we want to know is that we can be content. Can you watch one show and walk away? Can you play that game for the agreed upon amount of time? I'll give you an example. Duolingo. You want to learn a language. My children want to learn Spanish. I put my phone in guided access. I hand it to my 11-year-old. Guided access means he can't leave the app. He can't follow an ad. He plays for the agreed-upon 15 minutes. And at the end, it says, I know you're done, but you're 50 XP away from Emerald League. Shouldn't you give me another 5 minutes? And he'll come, Dad, can I have another 5 minutes? I'm like, no, we said 15 minutes. And now he's mad at me because I won't give him 5 minutes, even though we agreed to 15. He went in saying 15 is enough, and he comes away saying my dad is mean because tech told him it was true. You want to make sure you can be content. It's going to be a major sign of whether or not you are struggling to manage your Juul tech well. If you can say no to it consistently, you'll be okay. If you start giving to little things where it adapts your behavior and gains 33% more time out of you, it convinces you needed something you didn't want, that's where we're concerned. All right. Fist to five, I know you had someone in mind when you think about that reset. You're like, this is so good, I'm going to totally win this argument at home tonight. But that's not what I'm going to ask you. Fist to five is a way we manage big group surveys. Fist is zero, five is five of reset. Relationships and responsibilities, emotions, sleep, enjoyment, time. How many of those five are impeded for you because of your technology use? In my current life right now, I'm a 2 out of 5. There's a story we don't have time for today where I was a 5 out of 5. It actually led me to doing this work. Short version, I was a compulsive gamer and was trying to hide it. But 2 out of 5, would you turn to the person next to you and 10 seconds come up with what you are out of 5? Go.
Say the acronym again.
It's on your paper. Relationships and responsibilities, emotions, sleep, enjoyment, time. How many are impeded? Okay, what I want to see from you, your fist right in front of you. Show me out of 5 fingers what your personal score is. You're not doing this for your spouse. You're not doing this for your kids. Your score. So I would hold up a 2 because I'm a 2 out of 5. I can emotionally regulate with YouTube and I'm not always content with my time because it's when it's not YouTube, it's exercise. And when it's not exercise, it's chocolate chip cookies. Because I don't get to play video games anymore. All right. I only see about a third of you holding up a finger, though. I can actually see you. I'm looking for your hands. This is informing my practice here. How many out of 5? What's your reset?
Okay. All right.
I know. Knee jerk. Come on. Let's go. All right. Hands down. You're good. That's not legally binding. You can change your number. What can we do instead? Now, I will tell you, I've told you a couple extra stories, and I don't want to skip this, so we may not have our Q&A time. I'm just warning you ahead of time. Jonathan Haidt wrote the book Anxious Generation. In answer to what do we do if we've realized our reset is problematic, we remove it, we get that, we replace it, we don't argue that, but what do we replace it with? Risk, responsibility, free play. I'm going to give you some very tangible opportunities that you can engage because they're what I'm using with my own humans. First, risk. Your child needs real-world risk. Simulated risks online through video games do not count. Conquering the world and slaying dragons does not develop you as a human because it requires nothing of you as a human. We're talking morally, character-wise. I know you get good hand-eye coordination. You'll be a great air traffic controller, but it doesn't help you not be anxious and stressed. This is a pump track. That's my eldest and my daughter who couldn't quite ride it. Can you hurt yourself on one of these? Yes. You could break an arm. They're wearing helmets. We're mitigating risk as best we can. They know how to ride their bikes. They're motivated to do it. They want to give it a shot, so I allow them. We're saying yes to risk, to every risk that they are excited to do, and that we can say you've shown reasonable amounts of preparation. You could break an arm on this, though, but I promise you, arms heal faster than minds. We do need risk to develop as people. In Jonathan Haidt's book, The Anxious Generation, he talks about stress wood. Basically, you can get a tree in a completely safe environment that'll grow really fast, but it never produces roots because there was no wind to push on it. So it just collapses when it gets big enough. Our children do the same. If we make sure they're always just safe, they will collapse as adults. They will feel more anxious because they don't know how to inhibit feelings of anxiety because they don't know what real-world risk feels like. So climb a tree, scratch a knee. There is a risk, and I am sorry that bad things will happen, but your job is not as a parent to raise safe kids, it's to raise good kids. Kids who are adults with character and integrity, who know how to trust and follow Jesus. Which brings us to when they come up with a crazy idea. My sons are like, you know what we want to do? We want to play a form of tag. If you were to look real careful at these Nerf darts, you'll see that they've inserted toothpicks. They have then put balloons on the end of little cardboard tubes, and they go, Dad, can we shoot each other? And I was like, no, wait, wear glasses. Like, think with me. Worst case scenario, they get shot in the face and it sticks. They pull it out and they move on. Right? Like, that's not going to cause anyone permanent damage. Like, as long as your eyes have wraparound protection, go nuts. This was your idea. I'm going to say yes to this. And I'm going to take a picture for a real good visual, right? Like, risk. That made some of you very uncomfortable, but this is well within the wheelhouse of what our family says yes to. Then we add our risk to responsibility. This is Henry. And Henry is writing himself to there's Hadley. Isn't that adorable? To piano. Note that he doesn't turn around once. We have walked it. We have biked it together. We have driven it. And there's one friend's house between our house and that house. It's a 10 to 15 minute bike ride, 30 minute lesson, and a 10 to 15 minute ride back. It's about 6 blocks with one major street crossing. My absent-minded professor. Now, in fairness, I do peek over the fence the first time he goes over the street just so I can make sure I see that he gets there. But he does not have a phone on him. There's no blinking blue dot to say that he's arriving. I just need to see a backpack back in my garage an hour later. And that makes some of you really uncomfortable. I'm not saying you have to do this. I'm not saying make your kid go play Frogger on the freeway. I'm saying if you've got a kid who's old enough and showing responsibility, extend them responsibilities that involve risk, including biking oneself on a day where there'll be enough daylight and it's not torrential rains, right? To bike to piano, walk to the local park, whatever that risk might be that's responsible for your kids. You're also going to allow them to have responsibilities like landing their own fish. You ever lost a fish? So frustrating. Both my sons break into tears right after this. I gracefully cut out that part because I don't want to shame them. If you ever lost a fish, it's wildly frustrating. Now, these fish were literally on the shallows. If we were to watch that again, you can see them flapping. And they stay there for a second. And we could go in with nets and get them. And we didn't. Because part of responsibility is failure. And this is a lovely spot to fail. Failing at fishing is a very safe way to fail. It's not going to hurt anybody. My sons do start asking questions like, why doesn't Washington let us use barbed hooks? They're like, right, we would have landed those with barbed hooks. They spit these smooth little hooks. But that's called poaching, son. There's rules against that. So we don't do it. But when we talk about responsibility, it means we're allowing them to fail at the thing. You might let them play a sport and just let them be bad at it. If you've ever had a kid be a pitcher who's just getting knocked around, Henry got 6th run in a game that he was pitching in. Meaning they scored 6 runs and the mercy rule kicked in. Like, that's a rough day. When a home run gets hit on your kid, they look like this. And then they just stare at the outfield while the ball doesn't come in time, right? That's brutal as a parent. And yet, really important to letting our kids grow. Which brings us to free play. This is the woods in Ohanabakosh on Rainier. My sons on our last day of camping said, Dad, we really want to go just run around. Now, we've done it. They have some woodsmanship. They know how to survive the night. They are not completely ignorant of it. They're actually just this side of feral. So I said, yes, you've got 2 hours. You can go out in the woods. I'll come get you once we're fully packed. It's 8 a.m. I'm going to come get you at 10. 10 a.m. I go and find them. There are these little dots up here on this rock, which they have booby-trapped with fallen trees at this point. I walk up there, and I find this. A couple things to note. First of all, the pride of Norway has taken off his shirt. Henry does not have enough body fat to be at 48 degrees in the mountains without a shirt on at 10 a.m., yet there he is. He's apparently applied his shirt and jacket to this lean-to they've built. And also, I don't know this kid. I don't know where he came from. They apparently befriended some kind of wood nymph. I would also like to point out that my rule follower, he's been here for 2 hours. Helmets. I mean, you can never be too safe. Am I right? If we're going to be having fun, might as well make it safe fun. But this is a reasonable amount of risk. Now, they're on a giant rock in the middle of the woods. They would not be able to come get me quickly if they needed it. It is a risk we chose to take. I'm not telling you have to do it. Don't just abandon your children in the woods with no preparation and tell them to make it home. Like, don't put that on me if you go do that. I am saying my kids wanted an opportunity. They have shown responsibility up to that point, and I said yes. When we think about risk, and I'm not going to give you time on this one. When you think about beneficial stress, we know that there's risk, responsibility, and free play. The question is, which one of these could you implement this week? Either in tandem with the technology or in lieu of some technology. Hey, instead of watching a show, we're going to go do this other thing. for your family, if you're seeing some reset issues, these are the three you're going to be adding. They don't have to be all at once. It doesn't have to be like a boot camp. It actually will be fun because our kids were wired for fun. You better believe that Adam, while working in the garden, was having fun. He wasn't toiling in the garden. He was working. He was enjoying it. Like when you've gone on a really great run or a really great bike ride or a really great hike or swam in a really great lake with all of your favorite people, those were work, but they were also fun. We like to call it type two fun. Fun that takes preparation and effort, right? Type one fun is the fun that happens to you. Type two fun is what we're talking about here. So then how do we make tech safe at home? First, we need to think of the internet as a cul-de-sac. I get this all the time, but my kids have to be on that game. They have to be on this platform because that's where all their friends are. That's true. But let's think about where this cul-de-sac is. The cul-de-sac of the internet that our kids are going to, 93% of teenagers say that they go on the internet almost daily. 93, more than 9 out of 10. So this is true. This is where kids are going. They're making their friends. They're finding out who they like. They're asking their questions. They're learning about the world. But the cul-de-sac of the internet is next to a freeway and a federal penitentiary in the red light district at midnight. It is not inherently safe. It is the opposite. It is inherently antagonistic to young developing brains. It is actively trying to help them make poor choices and speak lies into their life. That's just what the internet does. It doesn't like your kid. In fact, it kind of hates them. So when you send your kid into these spaces, just know what you're getting into and adjust accordingly, I guess. I like to think of building hedges. I'm not going to tell you how big your hedge has to be. I like the scale of these hedges. Go ahead and build yourself some 150-foot tall hedges. Just don't think of them as walls. Don't think of them as impenetrable. Think of them as ways to put a buffer between yourself and the world. First, it needs to be around your network. If you have wireless internet in your home that's powering devices sometimes in different rooms, you need some kind of accountability on those devices. Option one would be something like a Griffin router. You put a router in place, it adds security to your personal network, no one can see your nanny cams, and it adds filtering to what content comes across your internet. Great. You could also, so that's mine. I use a Griffin router. Not a very pretty picture, but it's what it looks like. Griffin routers let you do things like this. Pick a device, set some user settings, and also block. So during homework, it'd be like if you're homeschool, you can't get on Minecraft from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. or whatever the time frame is. Like, this is our school time. You can still use the internet, but you can't use that website right now. Griffin allows you some of this functionality. I also like Griffin because it lets you set particular categories. So if you said, well, mom and dad's laptops still have Wi-Fi, and the Nest that we use and the Ring doorbell we use still has internet, but the smart TV and the gaming consoles lose Wi-Fi. So Griffin allows you some of that modern day parenting aspect. Your other option is just a Bark Home. It's a little device you plug into the router you already have, and it lets you use an app and set similar settings, but it is just a device that plugs in. So just keep that in mind. You'll need a certain level of trust with your family that they're not just going to circumnavigate the plugging process. And it does, again, similar levels of yes, no's. So that's our network. We have a hedge around our network. It now does what our family says. We don't do what the Wi-Fi says. It follows our rules. Devices, though, don't care about your Wi-Fi. So you need something like Bark on there. So if you've given your child a smartphone, you know what's happening on that smartphone. You don't have to spy on them. Bark doesn't tell you every device or search and every conversation. It just sends you concerning ones, and it's very smart. This is one of the few benefits of AI. It does a really good job of finding the text and saying, nobody likes you, or can you keep a secret, or can you use this other app? And it'll send you a notification that you can then go and get that parenting win and say, hey, what's going on? I noticed this thing. Bark parental controls. And Covenant Eyes. Covenant Eyes is an image-based one so that you will be able to have that parental conversation. I just had a family friend who had this happen. And again, it picked up a Word document. A kid had copied and pasted an image into a Word document, and the parent was able to go and say, hey, I noticed what's going on, and have that parental win, find where that child's heart was at, because the goal isn't never look at porn. The goal is have a heart that doesn't want to. You could never look at porn and still go to hell. I don't think Saul, when he was murdering Christians, had a lot of pornography in his life. But his self-righteousness was leading him to be so angry, he thought people should die if they didn't agree with him. Jesus thought otherwise. Jesus says our goal is to get our hearts right. Matthew 5, 28 through 30 is all about that, with gouging out and cutting off. Our family then, and this is the what type of tech to use to close this conversation, safe, ready, and good. Is the technology safe? How do we bring in the best technology for our family? We're going to make sure it's safe, on its face. We're going to make sure we're giving an egg, not a scorpion. How? The safest tech is going to be tool tech with no browser, with no app store, with some kind of accountability baked in, something like, oh, I thought I had a picture of it, I apologize, a Gab phone. Dumb phones, no browser, no app store, they're the best. When my sixth grader, who's going to play some elite sports, who's going to have some travel involved, needs to communicate with me, he's going to use a dumb phone. It's safe on its face. It's designed to not be distracting. But are they ready for it? We talked about this with the responsibility and risk piece. If they're faithful in little, they'll be faithful with much. If your child can't be nice to siblings, don't put them on social media. There's very little chance they're going to be nicer to strangers online than they are to people they're related to. Some people go, that's a really high bar. I know. I don't hate your kid. At the end of the day, let's have a high bar for putting our child on the internet. Someone will say, but what if my child never gets there? Then that's between them and God. At some point, they're going to be 18 adults responsible to the Lord. You can only manage the part you've got. So if your child goes, give me a smartphone now because I'm going to destroy my life later anyway. Okay. We don't deal with terrorists. Believe them. Right? And say, okay, I'm going to believe the Lord will change your heart between now and then, but I'm not going to be party to your self-destruction. I'm going to make sure I give you exactly what you are capable of handling well, and you are showing me you're not ready for this. Say those words out loud to them and create a framework. There needs to be time, place, the content that's appropriate, and some safety measures. Like you need to say pornography and pedophile to them. If you can't say those words out loud, your child should not be on the internet because they don't have the words to tell you what they've run into. Again, I'm not so worried about your kid on the internet. I'm worried about the internet around your kid. You have to prepare them for the things they might run into because it is more prevalent than we'd like to say. You guys are actually already doing a workshop, so you don't have to worry about this. You're doing the book study, which is going to be great. Finally, is it good? We look at the fruit. It is possible to give safe tech that your kid was ready for and have them just implode for no particular reason. We had this with one of our kids, saved up $80, bought a tech that he'd seen his friends have that he really wanted, and after 2 days, my wife and I had to buy it back, and we spent lots of money on Legos. Just guilt spent. Because we're like, we have no idea what's going on, but I'm looking at the flesh fruit, and it's not good. You're shorter tempered. You're more angry. You're more isolated. You clearly are having some dissension if within our own family only, versus love, joy, and self-control. You get those three from your tech. And we're going to end on this. Do you know what's actually possible? I'll give you some examples. Wildcrats, anyone ever watch this? Chris and Martin Kratt. My kids watch this. They'll watch a 25-minute show, spend an hour outside flipping rocks. That show improves my child's reset, their amazement with creation, and their joy in daily life. Dude Perfect. Full disclosure, they definitely got their balloon idea from Dude Perfect. But I can say, so we went to Dude Perfect Live. These are actually followers of Jesus. They did an amazing gospel presentation at the end of their two-hour giant convention thing. I was like, that was wild. Now my kids think every YouTuber they see is a Christian. I'm like, oh, actually, that was weird. Like, not all famous YouTubers love Jesus. Scratch is an MIT program designed to help kids program. A great person to use Scratch with is Griff Patch. He's appropriate. His content is caring and loving and age appropriate. So Owen will follow actually this tutorial, how to make an RPG. This is Owen's actual map he's built. This is like basically a replica of Zelda Link to the Past, Super Nintendo, childhood favorite of mine. So he is building this. I took a screenshot of it and his coding, and he's using Griff Patch to do that. At the end of the day, we have two kinds of tech, tool, and drool. We can know if it's healthy or not using a reset. We build hedges around our tech, and we use the best tech that is safe, ready, and good based on its fruit to raise kids who love God first and foremost, and then use all the tech that makes them look more like Jesus. And this conversation will equip you to help them do that. Thank you guys for your time this morning. Appreciate it.